Irvine, Washington, Wednesday, February 11th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, assessing the stimulus plan. We'll talk with Phil Kirpin, Director of Policy at Americans for Prosperity, as we get to the point where House and Senate conferees have apparently struck a deal on a $789 billion economic stimulus package. We'll ask Phil what he thinks is good about this package, what is lousy about this package, and what would make it actually create jobs and stimulate the economy. Also in this edition, the impact of this stimulus plan on welfare reform. We'll talk with Steve Malanga, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, about why this plan may actually encourage states to add people to their welfare rolls. And watch out for your healthcare privacy. We'll talk with James Robbins, a senior editorial writer at the Washington Times, who says a seemingly harmless provision to modernize and computerize medical records across the country could actually lead to government intrusion and government decisions on what is actually a good healthcare procedure for you. And of course, as the stimulus debate rages on across the country, many people flooding the switchboards on Capitol Hill as a result of what they've learned through talk radio. We'll talk with Texas Congressman Ted Poe about how he and his Republican colleagues are trying to fight back a Democratic attempt to reinstate the Fairness Doctrine, which would essentially call for equal time on any controversial issue on talk radio, and that would essentially shut down talk radio as it did for some four decades. All of that straight ahead on Dateline Washington, but we begin on Capitol Hill with our top news of the day, where Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says a deal has been struck for an economic stimulus package.
The difference between the Senate and House versions, we've resolved. The bills were really quite similar. And I'm pleased to announce that we've been able to bridge those differences.
The total price tag, as it appears right now, $789 billion. That's less than both the House and Senate versions passed separately in the past few weeks. Senator Reid says, in his opinion, the new bill creates more jobs than the Senate bill did originally and costs less than the House bill.
The middle ground we've reached creates more jobs than the original Senate bill and spends less than the original House bill. This bill creates 3.5 million jobs. More than one-third of this bill is dedicated to providing tax relief for middle-class families, cutting taxes for 95% of American workers. We all agreed that we cannot shortchange our future, which is why we're giving states the critical help they need to strengthen education and invest in our communities.
Senator Reid and a litany of other lawmakers on the Senate side of Capitol Hill went to the microphones to talk about how they were able to reduce the total spending number on this package. What they didn't say, however, is that most of that came from slicing away tax benefits, namely reducing the individual tax credit from $500 to $400 and for married couples from $1,000 to $800. Still, none of this could have been done without the promised support of three Republican senators, Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, and Maine Senators Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe, two of them absolutely necessary to break a possible Republican filibuster. Senator Reid says he has great admiration for those who took a lot of heat from their own party to help make this happen.
I'm really at a lack of words how to express my admiration, respect for the love of our country, the patriotism and the courage of three brave senators. Specter from Pennsylvania, Snowe and Collins from Maine. I don't think I need to say more than that.
Susan Collins then stepped to the microphone. She was the one that really led the compromise effort to try and trim some of the fat out of the bill, if you can call a $789 billion stimulus package trimmed. Still, she says she's very proud of the fiscally disciplined approach that lawmakers have taken to this bill.
I'm particularly pleased that we have produced an agreement that has a top line of $789 billion. That is less than either the House or the Senate passed bills. It is a fiscally responsible number that reflects our efforts to truly focus this bill on programs and policies and tax relief that will help turn our economy around, create jobs, and provide relief to the families of our country.
Meanwhile, Pennsylvania's Arlen Specter, who could face now a very tough Republican primary challenge in the race to keep his seat in 2010, says he originally preferred John McCain's plan of just a $480 billion stimulus package, largely based on tax cuts. But he says looking at the political realities, he had to compromise.
My preference would have been Senator McCain's bill of $450 billion in tax cuts. But in the legislature, you don't get everything you want.
Now Republicans find themselves on the defensive, at least from the media. Here's the question that Nevada Senator John Ensign got from MSNBC's Nora O'Donnell.
They say it will create 3.5 million jobs. There's $150 billion in there for infrastructure. Cutting taxes for 95% of Americans. And even as Joe Lieberman said, this is a turning point. How could you be against turning this economy around?
But Senator Ensign said that was a false premise for the question. He says there's a lot of reasons to be opposed to this plan, even though it's supposedly been trimmed down.
I'm not, obviously, we're for turning this economy around. The problem is that we all know that housing is the cancer that started this whole problem. It is the underlying disease in our economy. And this quote stimulus package it just doesn't go to the core of the problem. And I offered an alternative the other day that would have done a great deal to fix the housing problem in the United States. It was rejected along party lines. Then they take this bill, they go behind closed doors. I had asked for them to televise the conference so we could see what was being taken out, what was being put in. They could do it in front of the public, and they refused to do that.
But of course, the Democrats don't need much Republican support, just two Republican senators. Assuming they can keep their entire 58 Democratic senators in line, there will be no need for Republican support in the House, which from the Democratic perspective is good since they got zero Republican votes for their version of the stimulus plan a couple of weeks ago. Meanwhile, Vice President Joe Biden says he believes in the final version on the final vote that there will be more Republicans, maybe not many, but he says more than originally voted for the stimulus plan in either the House or Senate. For his part, Barack Obama still taking to the road to find more support for the stimulus plan, which he still wants on his desk by President's Day. After heading to Indiana and Florida in recent days, he stayed much closer to home, going to suburban Washington, specifically Springfield, Virginia, to talk about the help for highway and bridge construction contained within the stimulus plan.
We'll invest more than $100 billion and create nearly 400,000 jobs rebuilding our roads, our railways, our dangerously deficient dams, bridges, and levees.
Meanwhile, on the financial front, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner has been roundly criticized over the past 24 hours for not being more specific in his rollout of the new bailout plan for struggling financial institutions. Wall Street took a nosedive, nearly down 400 points, after Geithner's announcement on Tuesday. But on Wednesday, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs said the rollout was not designed for a one-day market reaction.
One-day announcements have provided positive changes in the market for plans that ultimately turned out to be unsuccessful, just as negative reactions have sometimes been at the forefront of plans that work.
Gibbs says, quite frankly, he and the Obama administration believe that the reaction on Wall Street to Geithner's announcement was unfair.
Yesterday's speech and framework were not designed for a one-day market reaction.
He also says that the proposed overhaul is the soundest way moving forward, given the financial crisis we face.
It's based on transparency and integrity through a comprehensive scrub of the financial system and a rigorous evaluation of the need in the financial system.
Meanwhile, the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, Barney Frank of Massachusetts, says he believes most banks will halt foreclosures temporarily. Frank says he's hopeful as many as 95% of banks will put a moratorium on foreclosures until Secretary Geithner unveils the details of how the second half of the Troubled Asset Relief Program will be spent. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill today, the CEOs of financial houses taking a tongue-lashing from both Republican and Democratic members of the House of Representatives, including this scolding from South Carolina Republican Gresham Barrett.
But now that you've received hard-earned taxpayer money, you owe my constituents some explanation on how you've gotten yourselves into this position and how you spent their money. Like other states, South Carolina is struggling, and too many of my people are losing their jobs due to your actions, which have driven this economy into the ground.
Pennsylvania Democratic Congressman Paul Kanjorski believes that many of the CEOs are making bizarre choices and are surprised by the public reaction because they're not used to public scrutiny.
But when you took taxpayers' money, you moved into a fishbowl. Now, everyone is rightly watching your every move from every side.
The CEO is testifying on Capitol Hill today, for the most part very apologetic in saying they understand the gravity of the financial situation facing this country. Citigroup CEO Vikram Pandit spoke of what he calls the realities of a new world and also apologized for a recent controversy over the purchase of a corporate jet.
I would also like to say something about the airplane that was in the news. In the end, I canceled delivery. We did not adjust quickly enough to this new world. And I take personal responsibility for that mistake. We need to do a better job of acknowledging and embracing the new realities.
Pandit says he is now taking just a $1 annual salary from Citigroup as long as this crisis plays out. Also, Lloyd Blankfein, a CEO of Goldman Sachs, appearing on Capitol Hill today, who says he's well aware that there's broad public anger right now aimed at the financial sector.
Many people believe, and in many cases justifiably so, that Wall Street lost sight of its larger public obligations and allowed certain trends and practices to undermine the financial system's stability.
But some CEOs are defending their actions. Robert Kelly of New York Mellon saying his institution is using federal dollars correctly. And that's exactly the argument being used by Ken Lewis, CEO of Bank of America. He says his bank is not a problem when it comes to the credit crunch.
We have every incentive to lend. And despite recessionary headwinds, we are lending. In the fourth quarter alone, we made more than $115 billion in new loans to consumers and businesses.
Meanwhile, on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones up 51 to 7940, the NASDAQ adding 6 points to 1531, the S&P 500 up 7 to 834, crude oil dropping $1.61. In other news quickly, both major candidates claiming victory in the Israeli election, leaving the Jewish state politically and deeply divided, and the government a potential gridlock. Moderate Kadima Party candidate Zippy Livni and conservative Likud candidate Benjamin Netanyahu both pictured in a newspaper under the banner headline, "We Won." Livni's party won 28 seats, Netanyahu's 27, but you need to control more than 60 of the 120 seats in the Israeli Knesset to get the majority. Now it's up to Israeli President Shimon Peres to figure out which candidate he will offer the chance to form a coalition government. When we come back on Dateline Washington, we'll get the thoughts of Phil Kirpin of Americans for Prosperity and find out what he thinks of the compromised version of the stimulus package. We'll also, in this edition, learn about the impact of the stimulus plan on welfare reform, healthcare reform, and we'll talk about the fairness doctrine. Stay tuned.